Hi everybody, and welcome to today's webinar, the Application Walkthrough and Virtual Advising Session. My name is Michelle Balorchi, and I'm joined with my colleague Nick Willen, and we're at the Institute of International Education's Washington, D.C. office. And today's session is primarily to assist you with your questions that you have as you are, you know, beginning the application process, selecting the awards and looking to see how you can begin putting the various components together to start your application. So we really want to devote a lot of time to walking you through that. We will open the application and show that to you. And so we'll be going through to start out a little bit about the program and the eligibility. We do want to spend some time walking you through the awards catalog, which is a key component to our website, and then quickly going through the review criteria, which is something that you should have in mind as you put together your project statement. And then finally, Nick will be assisting you through, you know, walking you through literally, page by page of the online application, and then we're going to open it up to some questions at the end, and we're really here to answer as many questions as possible within the hour. So we do want to just get started and dive right in. So a little bit of background on the Fulbright program. The Fulbright program has been around since 1946. It was established at the end after World War II when Senator Fulbright thought that, you know, this would be a great way to bring people together across borders, across cultures, through education, through collaboration, through, you know, exchanging viewpoints and different things through an educational program and cultural diplomacy with its cultural diplomacy at its heart. So this program has been administered by IIE since the inception on behalf of the U.S. State Department and the Bureau of Educational Affairs within the State Department. And so for over 70 years we've been supporting this program, and there have been numerous grantees that have gone through this program, both on the scholar side and the student side. So today's program is specifically geared towards the scholar program. And so if you are interested in applying for a grant and you've recently graduated from college with a bachelor's degree and you're interested in going to do a master's program or part of your PhD research work, please tune in to the webinars for the student program and the student website. This is specifically geared for scholars, faculty, professionals, artists who are experts in their field and looking to teach and research abroad. Okay, so to be eligible for the U.S. Scholar Program, you must be a U.S. citizen. And then after that, depending on the award that you apply to, you may or may not require that award may or may not require a terminal degree, so PhD or terminal degree. There are several awards that are open to experienced professionals, and so it's important to take a look at the award requirements listed in the award details. We also have several awards open to artists, professionals, dancers, musicians, etc., and that may not have a terminal degree but have significant expertise and accolades and professional standing in their field. For awards that require teaching experience, it's important to take a look at how many years that particular country or the award is looking for. And in terms of applying for another Fulbright Scholar grant, the policy is that you must wait 2 years between the time you complete a Fulbright grant and the time you start an application for another. So if you completed the Fulbright grant in September of 2016, you wouldn't be eligible for this competition. You'd have to wait until next year's competition. All right. So, really half of the battle in terms of approaching the Fulbright Scholar Program and determining what you want to do and where you want to do it is selecting the right award. So you're going to have to think about really, do you have any particular country that your project needs to take place in? Otherwise, is there a particular award that is looking for people in your discipline? So there's different ways to go about it, either the region or country or the discipline you come from. Nick will be walking us through the catalog so that you can kind of see how that all works. But it really is important to find an award in a country that will benefit from your project and that there will be some impact. And it would be clear to the reviewers that you need to be in that country to carry out your project. All right, so I'm going to turn it over to Nick, and he's going to walk us through the awards catalog. So handing it over to you, Nick.
All right, thank you, Michelle. So like you said, we'll be talking about the award catalog, which you can find on our main homepage here at CIES.org. You can find the URL right here. So this is where it all starts. You can find information on application guidelines, award program history, some blogs and news in the media all here. But today we're just going to focus on starting the application. So first you want to click on Browse the Award Catalog. That's where you're going to find our catalog of awards. So once there, this is our homepage with a photo of a recent scholar. So once here, you can start to look at the drop-down menu of select region, select country or area, or select discipline. Now, these are great places to start. So if you have a region of the world in mind, such as Africa or Sub-Saharan Africa, East Asia, Pacific, so on and so forth, you may narrow your search by selecting these right off the bat. Or you can go even farther and select a specific country you'd like to do your work or research in. Another option would be to select a discipline. So if you're in a certain field and you'd like to stay in that field while doing your research or teaching, you may select it here. But for today's purposes, let's go to advanced search because there's even more drop-down options in terms of narrowing your search. All right, so like I said, the region, country, or area is present here. You may also search by keyword. So let's say you are looking for an award in the STEM field, and you just like to search the word STEM or science or technology. You may do that here. You may also select your discipline as well and activity. All right, so new to this year's catalog, you will notice professional projects. But the old standbys are seminar, teaching, and teaching and research. Now, most of our awards will be in teaching and teaching and research, as well as research itself. So they give you the option to do teaching, research, or a combination of the two. All right, a seminar, that's usually with our IEA programs. But today, most of our awards are given in the CORE program, which basically means teaching, teaching, research, and research. So that's one other way to narrow down your search. Another way is grant length. So let's say you know you must teach a certain amount of months in your home institution next year, so you would like to narrow your search by the length in which you'd be available. You may do that under 3 months, 3 to 5 months, 6 to 10 months, or more than 10 months. Another option is flex. And we'll be talking about that a little bit more later on in this webinar, but very briefly, it just means breaking up your timeline into segments. So going to your host country and then returning and then going there once more. All right, another way to break it down is degree requirement. Now, about 80% of our awards require a terminal degree, like a PhD, but some do not. So if you'd like to break down your search in that way, you may, by selecting PhD or other terminal degree not required. Then there's category. Now, you'll see most of these start with CORE. So the CORE awards involve research, teaching, or a combination of the two. And you can break that down even farther by going into Distinguished Chair Awards, open to all levels, and postdoctoral awards, regional awards, and then there's the seminar. There's also professional profile, which is if you are working outside of academia at the time, you're a professional working outside of academia in a specific field, you may narrow your search by selecting open to academics or qualified professionals outside of academia. And then there is invitation letter. So there are quite a few guidelines in terms of what each award requires with an invitation letter. All right, sometimes it is strictly required, sometimes it's strongly preferred, optional, and should not be sought. So if this is a major determining factor for you, you may select one of these options here. So as you can see, there are many drop-down options to narrow your search. But just for today as an example, let's check out this All Disciplines Award in Albania. So this will give you an idea of how an award page looks. All right, so you can see here's the title of the award, the All Disciplines, the award code, the country, and the region. Over to the side here has some information on the number of grants that will be made available, the types of activities that are open to this award, and the category, the degree requirements, and also the program staff. All right, so this contact would be the best person to reach out to in terms of getting your detailed questions answered. So that's definitely a great resource to have on the awards page. So here on the award details, you'll see the grant activity is laid out, the grant length, 4 to 5 months. This will change from award to award. Most of this information will change from award to award. The locations that are possible, so sometimes this will be in a university or an organization, and sometimes they leave it up to the applicant. You can put in an organization that you've become affiliated with or you're in communication with that you would like to work with during your grant period. Another is your flex option. Again, we'll go into that a little bit more detail later. And then the discipline type. So you'll see there are a list of preferred disciplines for some awards. So this is another great way to narrow your search and to begin your research. Finding where you'd be a best fit, which country and which institution. All right, and then another thing to look at is award requirements. So different awards will require different things. Sometimes an invitation letter from a host institution is required. Sometimes it's preferred. Sometimes it's not sought. Sometimes language requirements are a factor in the application, where you need to be familiar with a certain language in order to engage in your grant. And then the applicant profile. So this is where you come from. Are you an academic? Are you a professional outside of academia? These details are laid out in this part of the requirement page, as well as any additional information that would be relevant to your application. Also, award benefits are often laid out here, how much what your monthly stipend would be for a teaching or a teaching research award. This is all laid out in some detail, as well as a country or area overview. It tells you a little bit about the country in which you'd be doing your research or your teaching. So let's say that you're really passionate about Albania and this is the award you'd love to apply for. Well, you can click that Apply Now button right up here, and that would begin your application. It would take you directly to our online application page. But before we do that, I'd like to take a look at our application guidelines. So you may click on this button right here. I have a tab open, so I just went there. So this will provide a checklist for each activity for the Core Scholar Awards. So you can see it's laid out by teaching, research, and the combination of the two. Just because it's the combination of the two and it seems to be all-encompassing, we're going to take a look at that. And Michelle, did you want to have a comment on the requirements for each award?
Sure. I just wanted to point out how valuable this checklist is for you as you put together your application. So let's say if you're doing a teaching and research award, you know, this will show you all of the things that you need in terms of, you know, your CV and the guidance on that. Just keep in mind that everything in terms of the files that you upload to the application, everything does have a page limit. And so if you have a CV that's 25 pages, we do ask that you reduce it to 6 pages or 8 pages for a Distinguished Chair Award. The bibliography can only be 3 pages. Your syllabi combined, you know, 2 or 3 syllabi that you upload can be 1 file, no more than 10 pages. So really just kind of keeping those things in mind. And then we do provide a lot of guidance. So in terms of the project statement, we have lots of samples. In terms of, you know, establishing contacts abroad, developing contacts abroad, if you scroll down, you can see that there's some guidance there under letter of invitation. So you're not alone on this journey. We're certainly there to help you, but the website does have a vast load of information for you to tap into. So this is very helpful and informative as you proceed through the application.
Very good point, and I can't really stress that enough, that there's so much information packed into this webpage and guidance for all applicants, all sorts of applicants, that I'm sure you can at least find the beginning of an answer here. And if it's not the complete answer you're looking for, then feel free to go up here and click on the Contact Us page, and that'll kind of guide you to the right person to talk to. And again, if you found an award already, that main contact will be found right here. All right, so that is the award catalog. So let's go back to the PowerPoint here.
Okay, so moving on. So in addition to selecting the right award, as you identify one or two or three awards that you want to consider and then narrow down, keep in mind that there are different options within an award. There is the flex option that Nick pointed out in the catalog, which allows you to make multiple visits to the country to carry out your research. It's available for some of the awards, not all throughout the catalog, but it's important to see if that is an option that you would require. And that would allow you to conduct your project over 2 academic years, and you would need to justify this in your project statement. And then, of course, looking out for if the award is suitable to where you are in your career, whether it's postdoc, distinguished chair, et cetera. And then lastly, you know, the different kinds of awards beyond the single country award, let's say. We do have the Global Scholar Award, which allows you to conduct your project, conduct your research across 2 world regions, 2 to 3 world regions. So let's say if your project required a visit to Brazil, South Africa, and India, for example, that would fit the Global Scholar Award parameters. And then we also have regional awards that are multi-country in nature. So there's the South and Central Asia Regional Research Award that allows you to select 2 to 3 countries within that grouping that's listed in the award and conduct your research in those countries. So there's lots of different ways to do a Fulbright, whether it's teaching, whether it's research, both, whether it's in 1 country, 2 countries, 3 countries, lots of different ways to do it. And just to let you know that if you are not currently affiliated with a university in the United States, it's not a problem. We do welcome applications from independent scholars, emeriti scholars, faculty, artists, and professionals. And so the Fulbright program really has evolved through the decades to be open and kind of adapt to the changing landscape in academia. So let's move on, Nick, and let's touch on the review criteria quickly, because this is quite important. It's also featured in on our website. We have a whole page dedicated to the review criteria. And so it's important to make sure that you address all of these points as you craft your project statement, because the committee, when it convenes in Washington, D.C., when the review committees come and they're looking at your application, we ask them to look exactly at the criteria here featured in the review criteria. If you're proposing to teach, are you suitable to teach that course? Do you have the requisite years of experience? Do you have the background for it? Have your colleagues attested to the quality of your teaching? Do you have any teaching awards, et cetera? Anything to show that you have experience and that you're an accomplished teacher. And speaking to the benefits, possible outcomes and the potential benefits, not only for the host institution abroad, but when you come back. Not that your Fulbright ends when you get back on the plane to the U.S. You know, we want to see how is this continuing, you know, the legacy of it, the multiplier effect. For grants that are focusing on research, the committee is going to look at the intellectual merits of the project and also the suitability and feasibility. The suitability for the country and that particular host institution, and the feasibility in terms of the timeline that you project, the what you hope perhaps the deliverables, what you hope to achieve within that time, and really, you know, if you're justifying the need to reside in that country. If it's a project that really revolves around data sets, a question might come up in the committee, well, why does this person need to go to Denmark to do this? Or why does he need to go to Argentina? So really addressing why you need to be in that country to carry this out. And also, if you have a letter of invitation, even if it's optional to the award, having that will enhance your application, because it's evidence of the host institution's interest, and that you will kind of hit the ground running because you'll have an affiliation already identified, some collaborators, perhaps a lab or the facilities you need or the project that you'll be joining. So it really is a great indicator to the review committee that you know, that this is a suitable project and it's feasible because you have the support in that country. So moving on, the application components, we're actually going to be going through, you know, walking you through the application page by page, but you can just see here that it's an online application form, and you know, at the core of it, you'll have your project statement, that's a big piece of it, and then the various components after your CV. So for teaching awards, we require 2 to 3 syllabi. For research awards, a 3-page bibliography. So if you're doing a teaching and research award, both of these are needed. 3 letters of reference, and we have some guidance on that. Ideally, it would be a range of referees, not just from one institution. For a teaching award, they should comment on your teaching. One should be on that. And then, of course, depending on the award, is a language proficiency report required, indicating that you're able to carry out the research with the language skills that you have, the letter of invitation as you know needed in the award, and then if you're in any of these backgrounds, arts, architecture, writing, journalism, etc., some supplemental materials. So kind of think of it as like a mini portfolio. You would be uploading a few files, whether audio, video, or kind of documents that attest to your professional experience. So, all right, so let's see if we have some questions first before we log into the application. We have a question about the process on getting a letter of invitation. So we can answer that for you, but I also want to, perhaps Nick, if you can go back to the website really quickly. There's a full page of instructions on developing contacts abroad. If you go to the application guidelines and we click down on letter of invitation guidance, there's different ways. You could start out by looking to see if the award has some contacts listed either at the Fulbright Commission there or the embassy that manages the program. There might be some contacts at the university there if it's it's a partner award specifically at a particular university. You could also look at the Fulbright Scholar Directory and see who has gone to a particular institution that you're interested in. Or you could reach out to us. We can assist you. Another great resource is your university's international office. Have they hosted any scholars from that particular country or that particular institution, et cetera? Or have any of your colleagues gone to that country or institution? You'd be surprised. You may or may not know that they've done a Fulbright, so you could find out in the scholar directory. So, all right, and how much should we tailor and refine the CV? Well, the CV should be tailored to reflect what's important that the committee would need to know for you in terms of the project that you propose, and we also have guidance on that. It is asking a lot for you to cut down from, you know, several pages to 6 pages. We understand that, but really what is relevant to the grant activity that you are hoping to undertake? So if you, you know, have expertise in several different subjects, we would really only want the CV to feature the information that would be relevant to the particular subject of your project statement, so of your project proposal. So kind of picking out the things that would be relevant that you would want the committee to see. All right. Okay. Would you please describe the Flex Award and how it is different from the Global Award? Well, yes. So the Global Award is an actual award in the catalog. So that would be an award that you apply to conduct research in 2 to 3 different world regions. The Flex is an option to the award. So it may or may not be available to all of the awards. And if we go back to the catalog, we can see, for example, the award that we had to Albania, for example. If you scroll down, you can see, yes, there is a Flex option, and there's a description on the parameters of how the grant can be carried out over the 2 academic years. So the Global Scholar Award is an award. The Flex is an option.
And just to add to that really quickly, so if you would like to exercise your flex option for a certain award, if it is made available, an applicant should include that in their project statement, an element of the application we'll get to in just a second. So you must justify why exactly the flex option would be best for you.
Great. So let's see if there's any other questions before we get into the catalog, the application. Are you able to include an appendix with a few figures and tables that exceeds the project statement page limit? And the answer is no. You need to abide by the page limits. If you do submit, depending on what the document is, whether it's your CV or the project statement, if you submit anything that is over the page limit, we will contact you and ask you to revise it to the required limit, because we can only provide the same number of pages for each application for the review committee. So to be fair, everyone's application has to be equal in terms of that. If you submit fewer, that's fine. There is a 3 to 5 page minimum and maximum for the project statement, so it can't be less than 3 pages, but it certainly can't be more than 5. All right, let's see. Okay. All right. Oh, this is a great question, and it comes up every webinar we have. Can I apply for more than one award? And the answer to that is no. You may only apply to one award per year, so per award competition. So that's why it really is important for you to select the right award and to narrow your search to a few. Don't select an award right away until you've weighed the options and considered a few other awards to see where you would be the best fit. So, for example, if you have a background in European Union studies and you would like to do a project that's focused on the EU, we do have the Schumann Awards, for example, the Fulbright Schumann Awards, which are EU-specific awards. But we also have an all-disciplines award to Germany and an all-disciplines award to Belgium, et cetera. If you apply to one of those all-disciplines awards, the committee might say, well, why didn't this applicant apply for the Schumann? He or she might be a better fit for that. So you really want to ensure that you've done the search in the catalog and selected the most appropriate because you would have a better chance because your profile would be a better match. Okay, so Nick, why don't we go through and start our application walkthrough, and we can also take questions and stuff along the way.
Yes, yeah? Let's. Okay, so once you click on that big orange button at the top, Apply Now, it'll take you to what we call Embark, and this is the online application system. It'll take you first to a login page. I should say right off the bat, you might notice that I'm using Chrome. That is the suggested search browser that that's probably best to use in terms of putting together an application. Firefox also works, but it's a little bit finicky. But we recommend that you do not use Internet Explorer. That tends to have a lot of problems, and we have not tested this on Safari. So, again, Google Chrome is probably the way to go here. Also, about the login page, we ask you to use an email address that you know you'll be using for quite some time. So once you finally submit your application, it'll take quite a bit of time for your application to be reviewed. So we ask that you use an email address that you'll be able to access for at least 1 year after submitting your application. Okay, so another thing that is good to know about the online application is that it'll log you out after 20 minutes of inactivity. So once you start working, it's a great idea, this button right here, Save and Next. This is your best friend right here. So always be clicking this button once you've added new information to each page, because you'd hate to lose information on the application. Okay, so the first page of the application is preliminary questions. And these questions are simply to make sure that you are eligible for the program. All right, so you'll notice the first question is, have you completed a previous Fulbright Scholar Award before, so core or seminar grant within the past 2 years? All right, so if you click no, great, you're golden. If you click yes, it will prompt you to see the core Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program eligibility requirements. And the reason for that is if you have done a Fulbright Scholar Grants or a seminar grant or a core grant within the past 2 years, you are not eligible. All right, so that is that timeline is at the very end of your previous grant until the moment you submit your application. If that is within 2 years, you're not eligible. If you're right on the border, I would wait to submit your application after 2 years has elapsed. All right, are you a U.S. citizen? As Michelle covered before, the Fulbright U.S. Scholar application is only open to U.S. citizens. So if you click yes, you're fine. No, it'll prompt you to check out this website right here. So if you are not, if you happen to be on this webinar and you are not a U.S. citizen, don't worry. We have opportunities for you, and they can be found right here. All right, so and then it'll ask you which program you're applying to. The U.S. Scholar Award is probably the most common, but we also offer the Public Policy Fellowship and the International Education Administrator Awards. We have webinars on both of these. You may check them out on our homepage. Moving on to instructions. So on the instruction page, you'll find some really handy links to the application guidelines, which you have seen already. It's this page right here that breaks down what each application needs depending on the activity. The application instructions, now this is a 29-page document with notes that breaks down every single page of the application. So if you have a clarifying question or a concern that we have not addressed, this is a great place to look first off before hitting that Contact Us page button. The catalog of awards can be found here as well. You're familiar with that now. And the Fulbright Public Policy Fellowship Application Guideline and the International Education Administrator's Instructions. So we have instructions for each individual award. Okay, so moving on to program information. So this is where you'll start your application. It's a great place to get really kind of preliminary information on terms of where to start. So first, you select a country of interest or, in some cases, a multi-country or global program. And what's pretty cool, this is new to the application page, by the way. If you select, let's select Austria, because we're really into Austria. It'll automatically fill in the world region right here for you, so you don't have to worry about matching the country with the world region that we've delineated here. Then, below, the award numbers that we'll bring up are only in Austria. You can see we offer quite a few awards in Austria, so you won't have to worry about matching up each award code with this right country and making an error in that way. We've taken care of that for you. So for example, if I go up and I choose, never mind, I actually want to go to the Bahamas, you'll see that the world region will change. And look, we only offer one award to the Bahamas. It's the All Disciplines Award. So it automatically does that for you. You may also select the activity. So for this particular award, they only offer research and the combination of teaching and research. So that is decided for you. And you may also scroll down and put in your timeline requirements. So when you'd like to start and how that will match up. And also the flex segments. So if a flex is available for that particular grant, for that particular award, you may choose, and you'd like to take that option, you may choose it here. But I will say that it's best when you're starting to fill out your application, it's best to have your award catalog and your application guidelines open at the same time. That's really helpful in terms of adding information. If you run into a field here that will ask a question that you're not sure, it's great to have your award catalog so you can check out the requirements on the side too. All right, so moving on, we have the professional profile. So the professional profile is basically detailing where you come from. All right, so what profession are you in? What field are you working in? What institution? All right, so you'll put in your prefix, your title, your first name. This is a test account, so it's Test William Fulbright. Your preferred name. All right, so if your preferred name is the same as your first name, please do not repeat. Don't put it in twice. Just right here in the first name will be just fine. Your middle name, your last name, and any suffix and then your current academic or professional title. Now, it's quite a comprehensive list, as you can see, so look carefully. But on the off chance that your title is not present in this list, you may type it into this other box right here, and the start date of your current position, and whether or not you are a postdoctoral applicant. So you can see the definition that we have here is postdoctoral applicants are defined as those within 5 years of obtaining a PhD at the time of the application. All right, again, so this is where you're coming from. So the employment information, so what is your current institution? This is a searchable field. So you will, it's not a drop-down like the title field was before. So let's say you are a professor at the University of Oregon. Best practice here is to just type in Oregon. And you'll see that all the institutions in Oregon, or at least most of them, will pop up and you can click on your institution. Now, if you can't find it, that's fine. Just put it into Institution Other right here. And then you can start to break down what department are you in, what school are you in. All right, so you can detail that information right here. All right, so this is the address of your institution right here, okay? So not your home address, but your institution address. If you are outside of the United States, obviously you will not select a state. You can select this top one right here and put in extra information in the province and state field right here. Zip code, we ask you to do the zip code +4 format here, telephone number, and your work email. Moving on to academic credentials. So on this page, you will detail how many awards you've received, what your degrees are in, from which institutions, okay? And we ask you to start with your most recent degree or your most highest or most terminal degree first. So if you have a PhD, we ask you to put that number one right here, following by your previous degrees. And then moving on to this part of the application, which is list your 5 most significant accomplishments. All right, so these may include details from your CV that you'd really like to put on display for the review committee, things that are tailored to the award that you're applying for, tailored to your project statement, what you'd like to do in the country. And we ask you not to, don't just write, see my project statement or see my CV. We kind of want like a highlight reel right off the bat of what exactly you've accomplished in the recent past. Okay, so moving on, at the bottom of this page you'll find details for residence or professional trips abroad for 3 consecutive months or longer in the past 6 years. All right, so where have you been in the past 6 years for longer than 3 months? If you've stayed in a country for an extended period of time, this is where you'd detail that information. All right, and so if you have completed a Fulbright grant in the past, this is where you put that in. How many did you? How many grants have you been awarded? And then once you select, let's say you have had 1 previous grant, this will appear. You can select the type of grant that you engaged in, and then the academic year in which you did that grant, and the host country or program. And then we're going to press save and next because that's the best thing to do, to save your work. Okay, so here you'll put in your home address, different from your institution address. So first you'll put the address of your institution, then your home. And then employment eligibility. Okay, so this is important to know that employees and their immediate families that are working or current employees of the U.S. Department of State or of a public or private organization under contract to the U.S. Department of State are ineligible to apply for a Fulbright grant until 1 year after termination of such employment. All right, so that's a major stipulation, something that's good to know. So if this applies to you, you can click yes, but we're just going to leave it no for now. And dependent information. So the Fulbright program does allow you to bring dependents. along with you during your grant period. Now, this could be a spouse or a relative, like a child, a grandchild, a parent, or a sibling, who is financially dependent on the applicant. All right, so you will detail that information here. How many dependents will you be bringing along? Then if you have ever been convicted of a felony or misdemeanor, now these are pretty, so this is excluding minor traffic violations. You would want to stipulate that here. Now, if you are convicted of a felony or misdemeanor after submitting your application, so you've already pressed send and then you're convicted, then you would need to clarify that in writing. So promptly inform us at our email address, which you can find on our Contact Us page at scholars@iie.org. Then we have Fulbright Race Ethnicity Survey and then citizenship information. So if you are a naturalized citizen, this is the place to input the date of your naturalization. Or if you have a second country of citizenship, this is where you put that information here. Okay, next up. References. Now, we get quite a few questions on references, so I'll try to do my best in terms of detailing this. So one policy that we have for the Fulbright program is that we will only accept reference documents through our online system. So this is the page right here, references. And so if your reference writes you a really beautiful letter detailing exactly why you'd be, you know, perfect for the Fulbright program and then gives it to you to send to us, that's really kind of that person. But the proper way of doing it is to register them on this recommenders page right here. So you put their first and last name and email, and then you send that person an invitation. Now, that would be coming from the noreply@embark.com email address. They would receive it, and then it would take them through the steps of submitting a recommendation for you. It's a good idea to, of course, ask your recommenders whether it'd be okay to write a reference report for you, and also to stay in communication with that person. So once you've invited them through our online system here, tell them that it's been sent and to check your inbox. And, you know, sometimes that ends up in the spam folder, unfortunately, but to keep an eye on that as well. So then you'll notice the status right here. So this is an email address of a colleague of mine, but the status was invited. So that means this recommender has not begun the recommendation yet. Simply that the invitation has been sent. And you can see the different statuses that could pop up right here. So if it's blank, you haven't even invited anybody yet. If it's invited, they've been registered, but the email has not been sent. Open, the referee has received the email, but the reference has not been submitted, and submitted is what we're looking for here. The reference, the letter of reference has been submitted. Now, if you realize you've made a mistake and you have put in the wrong email address or there's some bad information right here, simply remove that person from your list of recommenders and then re-add them with the proper information and then simply resend and start the process once more. One little detail here, we require 3 recommenders for the Fulbright Core Scholar Program, no more and no less. So if you send in 4 recommenders thinking, you know, that'll hedge my bets, unfortunately, we're going to have to delete one of them, and that could delay the review process. So really think about exactly 3 recommenders for your application. Save and next. Okay, so the language proficiency report. As we touched upon very briefly before, some awards will require a foreign language background. And again, those are detailed in the award catalog. So once you find your award and go to award requirements, that'll be detailed there.
So Nick, can we just quickly jump to the awards that you had open and see what the language is? Because we're getting some questions as to whether the language proficiency report would be required. So let's see the wording for this one. It says language requirements. So keep in mind, for any teaching Fulbright grant, the teaching will be in English. So here it says English is sufficient for teaching, and then foreign language proficiency sufficient to complete the research project is required. So for applicants without the local language proficiency, feasibility of conducting the project must be demonstrated in the project. So it looks like they don't specifically require, for this particular award, they don't require a language proficiency report. However, other awards will require you to submit that if you're doing a research project that requires interacting with the local community. So some kind of explanation needs to be there. So the language proficiency report is a report that we have on the application website, and you need to find somebody at your university. Usually, if you go through your Fulbright campus liaison, they can direct you to the faculty member for each language in the languages department that does these reports.
Thank you, Michelle. And as you can see at the top of the language proficiency report portion of the application, you will detail exactly what is laid out in the award description and the award requirements of the award you've selected. All right, so if it is required, you would select this one right here. If it's not required, then that one right there. But let's say you're Albanian and you speak fluent Albanian and that's what you're applying for, you can select I am a native speaker as well. And also new to this year's application system, it'll detail exactly what is required of you based on the selections you've made in your language proficiency right here. Okay, so if it is required, you will be asked to do a self-evaluation and an external language evaluation. Okay, so you will detail, first off, the relevant languages that you now possess, as well as a self-evaluation. So how many languages would you like to add to the self-evaluation? And where did you pick up that language background, and what language is it? And briefly describe your language proficiency. Okay, so describe the nature of the test that you've taken, who administered it, the date that it was taken, and the ratings received. Okay, so that's kind of a way to talk about, to self-evaluate your language skills. But if it's required, you will also be asked for an external language evaluator. All right, and this is set up very similarly to the recommender page. All right, so once you have the language evaluator, you will add them to this list here and send them an invitation to send in an evaluation within our online system. Again, it can't be coming through you or by email. It's got to be through our application system right here. Okay, and I know there's been a lot of questions, I've received a lot of questions about external language evaluators. If you're unsure where to reach out to get an external language evaluation, I think if you're within an institution, if you're working in academia, finding a college-level language instructor in that field would be the best way to go. If you are working outside of academia, looking into your alma mater, where you studied before, if there's a language teacher there that would be willing to evaluate you. But let's say you would like to be evaluated in a language that's a little bit more obscure, so your institution does not offer that kind of thing, does not offer that language instruction. I would reach out to the embassy in the country to which you're applying to see if there's any options there. They may have a system in which you can be evaluated for your language. Okay, so moving on. Okay, so and this portion of the application is project details. So this is where you will enter your project title and a brief abstract of your project. Now we ask you to watch out for spelling, of course, and also to use proper capitalization for your project title. Also to use the Latin alphabet when laying out your project title and abstract. So the following characters will kind of mess up our system, and it's just best to avoid them and use the Latin alphabet. Also pay attention, 700 character limit. So one shall not go over the 700 characters. Your preferred host institution. Now, if you have more than one preferred host institution, that's just fine. You can add them to the other institution list here. So there's a specific format in which that can be done. So you can add the name of your host country, followed by a comma, then the name of your host institution, another comma, and then propose dates for that, for staying in that institution. Okay, so if you don't remember exactly what I just said, that's okay. All those details are laid out in the application instructions, which you can find right there in the instructions page. All right, so here's where you lay out the letter of invitation, the various requirements there. Now, this part here is, I'm willing to consider other awards. Now, in some cases, in rare cases, an application will be received, but it will just not be a very good fit for the country to which they've applied. And in rare cases, they can be matched with another award in an alternate country. Now, I think I stressed it enough that it's a pretty rare case, so I wouldn't lean on this option too heavily, but it's good to think about. Are there other awards that you're interested in? Are there other countries that you're also interested in?
Nick, if I can jump in.
Sure.
So to echo what Nick was saying about the you know, it is rare that we would contact you, but we do want to, to know if there was another award in the catalog that you'd be interested, or another country. So it may be that perhaps, it could be for a variety of factors, but perhaps the country that you applied to, by the time all things are said and done, because this is a long timeline, that perhaps that program is suspended in that particular country, but the commission or the embassy deemed your project very high quality and that you were a great candidate, so they would like to see if you could be accommodated elsewhere. That might be one situation. Another situation is that a particular country deemed your application also to be very high quality, but they didn't have enough awards and enough funding to take you on as well, and so the program would like to have you, see if you're interested in another country. So the important thing is to focus your project statement on the award that you're applying to. You should not mention any other country or award, even if you're listing it here, but it's just to have on our radar in case, in the rare circumstance that we would need to potentially put you somewhere in a different place.
Thank you very much. Another thing at the bottom of this page I want to briefly mention is the ethical requirements. Okay, so based on our policies, we want to make sure that projects that involve human subjects or animal subjects are vetted by the Institutional Review Board. So if your project will include research on human subjects or animal subjects, please clarify that here. All right, so let's jump up to, so upload. So the, like we mentioned before, the application will require a project statement, sometimes a letter of invitation, sometimes a syllabus or a curriculum vitae, and a bibliography. Okay, so that all depends on what kind of award you're applying for. That information can be found in the award catalog. I just want to say, please pay attention to the formatting requirements, the number of pages, single space, what type of font, what size. All of that I know is kind of granular, but it is important once we start reviewing hundreds and hundreds of applications. We wouldn't want to delay that process. Same goes for the CV or resume, and they can be uploaded here. Now, additional uploads. This is a little bit more nuanced. So for those of you in the arts or in the creative fields, we might want to see work that you've done in the past. So this is an additional uploads. This is where you kind of share the work that you've done before. So if you want to add your letter of invitation as well, can be found here to upload. And so those details in terms of requirements of formatting can also be found here. Now, course outlines and syllabi, of course, those are only required for teaching awards. So page limits and the file sizes are all present right here. So I think I misspoke earlier. So rather than in additional uploads, it would be in supplemental materials that those in the arts or with materials or works from the past they'd like to share, this is where you'd upload that in supplemental materials section of the application here.
Yeah, and to just kind of underscore again how every upload you have will have a file limit. So just be cognizant of that. If you exceed the file limit, we will contact you and ask you to revise and resubmit.
So near the end, you'll find the Fulbright Publicity Survey. I just want to say that this is used solely for statistical purposes and is completely confidential. So this will not be shared with outside external third parties. It will not be seen by reviewers or used in any other way during the selection process. So we ask you to just please answer your questions honestly and to the best of your ability. Certification, this is where you will sign and date your application, basically saying that you have honestly and accurately completed the application. And then, last but not least, is the review section. So this is a pretty handy section of the application. This will let you know if anything that is left incomplete. So in the process of filling out your application, let's say you accidentally deleted something, this will let you know that before you make your final submission. Now, that is not to say that everything is correct, just that everything is complete. So don't rely on this to make sure that your application is correct. It's still a good idea to go back and make sure that you filled everything in correctly and honestly. And then once you, these have all been checked off, then a button will appear here that says submit. It's important to press that button because we cannot review your application unless it's been submitted. So, yeah, look out for that one.
And if I can add, just kind of underscoring the importance of really being thorough. I mean, I know how, we always tell our students and anybody that we work with, you know, to be thorough and to kind of take your time as you go through this, because we wouldn't want you to find some errors after you've submitted. So we have been getting some requests for people who have kind of submitted, you know, earlier and they've got their application done and they wanted to submit well in advance. That's great. That's wonderful. We absolutely encourage you not to wait until the August 1st deadline. However, be sure, you know, more than 100% that you are providing everything that you need to and that, you know, that you've checked for typos or misspellings or, you know, those kinds of things. Everything that's under your within your control. Obviously, the letters that will be coming in from your referees, those may come in after you hit the submit button, and they should be in by August 1st. But, you know, we wouldn't want you to run into a situation where you realize that there was an error on page 3 of your project statement. We'll do our best to release the application to you again, but it would be helpful if you go through section by section to ensure accuracy and completeness.
All right, so as you can see, we've reached the end of the application walkthrough, so let's just jump back to the PowerPoint and have some closing comments here.
Right, so we've actually hit the 1 hour mark, so I'm just going to wrap this up. I want to show you, though, the timeline and the process that's involved. It is a somewhat lengthy process. So August 1st is the deadline. The month of August is devoted to reviewing applications for technical eligibility and completeness. And again, we will contact you if there is something missing or perhaps you uploaded your CV twice instead of the project statement. The month of September is devoted to the discipline committee reviews. These are peers from your discipline that are reviewing your application for the merit and the quality of the project. And then from that point onwards till early November, we convene peer regional review committees in Washington, D.C., and these are usually alumni of the program that have gone to either your country or the geographic region. And they are from across disciplines. So it's really important to have your project statement reviewed not only by colleagues in your discipline, but also generalists, colleagues that are outside of your discipline so that they can give you feedback in terms of the language and the accessibility of the project. And then November to January, any of the applications that were recommended by the peer committees go to the in-country review committees either at the Commission or the Fulbright Commission or the embassies that administer the Fulbright program, and the final decisions are made in country. So at the peer review stage, you're either recommended or not recommended, and at that stage, we will notify you. And then from February to May, it's a long period of time, but the application approval, the selections go through, grantees are notified if they are selected. And we send out the packets in May and June, and you will get information about pre-departure orientations, whether they're in country or in the United States. And just to point out, we will be archiving this webinar, so it is recorded. And once we archive it, you'll be able to click on all of these links here to the helpful information on our web pages. And you can contact us if you have any questions that we haven't that we weren't able to answer today. You can contact us at scholars@iie.org. I do encourage you to register with my Fulbright if you haven't done so already, so that you can get key important updates about the program and other webinars that are going out, different awards that are available, and, of course, our website and the social media that we always like to promote, because it's fun to see pictures and stories and hear from scholars abroad, and also visiting scholars that are here in the U.S. and what they're doing. So engage with Fulbright on social media. Check our website out for more information, and email us if you have any questions along the way. Thank you.
Thank you very much.